Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing to you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for this next hour, they're going to be the views of Constance Cumby, who is an attorney back in Detroit, Michigan. As a personal friend, Constance has written extensively about the occult movement. In fact, it was her book, The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow, which I read back probably about 1981 after having been involved with the conservative movement for almost 20 years at the time. And I always knew there was something missing. There was some logical explanation for what was going on, except nothing made any sense. Why were some of the people doing what they were doing? And if what they were doing didn't make sense, there had to be another explanation. And Constance's book, The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow, of course, introduced me to the whole world occult movement. It was the first time I realized the part that the Masons, at least the people who really understand Masonry, in the upper echelons above Masonry, above the 33rd degree, within the occult degrees of Masonry, how the Rosicrucians and the Theosophists and the other groups, and of course the going into the background. Yes, so we're going to have Constance here in just a moment, going into the background of what was going on, how we'd gotten to where we are. Well, right now we have Constance with us. Hi, Constance. How are you doing?
Good evening. State Bar of Michigan convention was on, and it was a busy day.
All right, fine. Well, I'm glad that you're here. How are things back there in Detroit? Is the economy as bad as they say?
The weather was lovely this time of year in Michigan. It usually is in September, but the economy is in trouble here.
I understand that a lot of those great big old mansions that they had in Detroit, and, you know, they've been around for a long time up in the area where Henry Ford used to live. Mm-hmm. I mean, simply people are just moving out, leaving the mansions empty.
No, I don't think those are getting left behind. The Grosse Pointe mansions still seem to have a crowd. I think that the Bloomfield Hills crowd down close to where my office is may have more people affected. There's a lot of the Grosse Pointe seems to have the older money,
right?
And it seems to be the people with the newer money affected so far.
Okay.
And that's touched everybody to one extent or another. And now with the stock market fluctuations, very few people remain untouched.
Well, I think everybody is going to be touched before this is over, and everybody's going to be hurt. But I just hope when we come out of this, why we'll get back to some form of sanity instead of the insanity that grips our nation today. But however, we're not going to be talking about the economy. We're going to be talking about the family. Now, most people don't even know what the family is, but I hope after the program this evening you'll know about it. It is a supposedly Christian cult, at least hiding behind the mask of Christianity, that puts on the annual presidential prayer breakfast. But I'm going to let Constance give you the background of this incredible organization that has tentacles into almost every aspect of power in America, and most people have never heard of the family. Go right ahead.
Okay, well, the family had some interesting origins. That some of the inspiration came from Frank Buckman, who was a Lutheran pastor from Pennsylvania who went to England and had what he called a Keswick experience, or at Keswick, K-E-S-W-I-C-K, in England. And it was Jessie Penn Lewis he claimed to have the experience under, and I've respected her work. But at any rate, he claimed that he was into receiving direct guidance from God in a form of meditation.
All right, you hang on to that. We'll be back in just a moment with Constance Cumby and discussing the family. Go right ahead, Constance.
You know, there were other threads in Seattle, Washington, there was Abraham Variety, and who, interestingly enough, preferred to be known as Abram Variety, which symbolically may be interesting. I don't know exactly what was in his mind, but Abram was the name that Abraham had before God called him out of pagan Ur. And when he called him out of pagan Ur, he renamed him Abraham. And Abram, in a sense, could possibly represent going back to Ur. And there certainly were some indications that perhaps that may have been happening at one level or another. But Abram Variety was in Seattle. He was director of the Goodwill Industries. He had been a pastor for a few years. I believe his ordination was Lutheran. It was Lutheran because he was Norwegian. And Abram Variety was a time in Seattle when there were unions, the Wobblies, the IWW, and claimed labor unrest.
Now, what year are we talking about, Constance?
1935.
So this is certainly two-thirds of a century ago. Anyway, go right ahead.
Okay. He organized prayer breakfast, and it was organized. The people were getting together, but what they were doing was it was supposed to be put a cap on the labor unrest. But it was under the auspices of a prayer breakfast, and he taught that you could have small groups get together and that there was power in small groups rather than going and preaching the gospel to everybody. You organized small core groups. And then the concept evidently worked to his satisfaction, and he located it to other cities, and then they took it to the nation's capital. This was coinciding at the time when Buckman also was spreading his ideas, his 1938 inspiration in the Black Forest of Germany for moral rearmament. And Buckman's Variety's works both came at a time when Hitler was arming Germany. And they were the track that these men were on was that you morally rearm, you disarm and you morally rearm. And there was a great deal of convergence of the two movements, Frank Buckman's and Abraham Variety's. And then they met up, and during the war years itself, they organized in Washington. There was a Mrs. Marion Johnson, who was married to an Amar Johnson. She was a niece of FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back, Constance. Well, Dr. Stan, and Constance is giving us the background of this group called The Family. You've probably never heard of it, one of the most powerful organizations in America today, but it really started in the mid-30s with a fact named Abram Varedes, and he was a minister, and he was up in Seattle, and of course was using his organization there to control labor unrest. And then there was a Frank Buckman, who is, of course, pushing a moral rearmament back in those days, and this is 1938. This is prior to the Second World War. And these were movements, how do you mobilize people? How do you get them to do what you wanted to? And the idea of prayer breakfast came up, and then eventually the idea of a presidential prayer breakfast at the national level came up. And most people think that the presidential prayer breakfast that's held on a regular basis every year in Washington, D.C., really has something to do with the president. Well, I'm going to let Constance tell the story. Go right ahead.
Well, Frank Buckman had an earlier movement, and his moral rearmament came up in 1938, and it was directly during the Hitler years. And he had praised Hitler, and Variety was allegedly very enthused with Nietzsche, Friedrich Nietzsche, and the philosophies. And there was a convergence of their movements, particularly through Sam Shoemaker, a New York clergyman who had a protege named Mrs. Imar Johnson, Marion Imar Johnson. She had a yacht, and she and her husband would sail on their yacht called the Enchantress. And she was supposedly from British nobility, and she leased a home on Embassy Row in Washington, D.C. And they had 12 people who would have a retreat, and every year the 12 would meet, like the 12 apostles. And just about all 12 of them were prominently and distinctly into very heavy mysticism. And I'm holding a book from one of them who was one of the pivotal organizers of the lobbyists of the United Nations for the establishment of a prayer room or a meditation room at the United Nations. And people assume that this man was a good Christian man. He had a movement, a literacy movement, Each One Teach One. But I have his books, which were supposedly Christian books at the time, but they're so full of New Age and occult talk, it just can't be ignored. Professor Ryan of Duke University, co-creators with God, just like Barbara Marx Hubbard says, that we are all gods. There are millions of gods. We're gods without knowing it, even if we refuse to believe it. And this was the orientation of several people that were there. They had camps of the various people that were at the early movements of this during the Abram Variety days. E. Stanley Jones, he called his movements, his camps, ashrams. Sam Shoemaker, who was Frank Buckman's associate with Moral Rearmament and very active in the early days of the AA movement. Rufus Jones, Frank Laubach, who was the wrote the outrageous paragraphs I just alluded to, several others, Dr. Glenn Clark and Star Daly, who are very interesting names because they formed camps with the name of Farthest Out, and they were Farthest Out too. There was a very heavy mystical bent with all these people, and they all were into this quote guidance unquote. And they were reaching people, supposedly to reach them for God. And let's hope that some of them, for the sake of their souls, were sincere. But there was a very interesting orientation that appears to be more theosophical than Christian. Norman Grubb, interestingly enough, was involved too. And he was the biographer. And Norman Grubb played an interesting role. He was the organizer of InterVarsity. He was the brother of Sir Kenneth Grubb, who headed British intelligence during World War II, was a primary organizer of the World Council of Churches and the International Institute of Strategic Studies. Norman Grubb said he had lost his faith and did not regain it until he discovered the great mystics. And the great mystics that he wrote and promoted in his books, Jacob Beam, who was the same and one who inspired Madame Blavatsky, William Law, and P.D. Uspensky, who was George Gurdjieff's disciple, a Russian theosophist. And interestingly enough, his followers have a website called Christ Is Us, and they have the Jacob Beam, William Law resources. And they lead you right directly into Theosophical Society sources. So there is definitely a bent there. How much of it was open rebellion and how much of it was just plain deception is hard to say. But one of the people who became involved with them, right near the beginning with Abraham Variety himself in 1944, was Paul N. Temple. Temple was, according to the Billy Graham Archives, Center Archives, was a primary, was a member of the core, the inner circle, on the prayer breakfast group almost from the beginning, from 1944, at least on. He was a member of the very inner circle together with Mark Hatfield, several others. But interestingly enough, his name comes up in other books, too. I have a book with me, The Hunger of Eve, by Barbara Marx Hubbard. I'm sure you've heard of her.
Yes, very, very much so.
And she does not, she talks about Paul Temple, who gave her so much help in her work, and who was such a big help in the Soviet-American dialogues. But she refers to him with his other hat as the president of the Institute of Noetic Sciences, which is one of the world's most powerful New Age groups.
Now, I think it's so important for our listeners who may not understand that when we're talking about the New Age, we're talking about mysticism, we're really talking about the pathways into the occult, which is the antithesis of Christianity. I mean, Christianity bases its beliefs on the Bible and the Word of God. Mysticism bases its appeal on how we're going to experience God, how we're going to come into contact with God, how we're going to realize that we ourselves are God, and that everything is God. And this is the really the antithesis of Christianity. And yet this movement has always been here, going back for 5,000-6,000 years, and now it's manifesting itself here in the early years as the family is beginning to organize here in the United States, starting in the mid-30s, but right to the point today where it is one of the major forces in Washington, D.C., and nobody ever talks about it. But you pick up the story.
Well, they came up almost in the wake, Dr. Monteith, of the disappointment, the theosophical disappointment over Krishnamurti not assuming the full role they had hoped for him to assume when they hoped to start their new world order. And this is interesting to me because some of the New Age writers, such as Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh, have said that when Krishnamurti refused this and that he was suitable, that the next person the masters had to turn to was Hitler. And this group arose during the Krishnamurti years, and some aspects of it appear to have been really softening the Christian world up to have accepted Krishnamurti. And then the next phases of it, they were definitely softening the Christian world up to accept mysticism. And very interesting, the theology that they were spreading was very, very similar to the theology that was proposed in the 1903-1904 proceedings of the Theosophical Society in Amsterdam, when they said it would become necessary for them to send missionaries to the Christian world to teach them theosophical concepts. And it almost looks like this group of people reading their books, the occult influence, is extremely obvious, and it's very, very possible that these were the missionaries to convert the Christian world to as much theosophy, going inside for wisdom, experiencing the Christ consciousness, as they would put it, as could be accomplished.
And of course, the thing is that they would have to sell this under the guise, oh, this was really Christianity. We're going to show you not the old-fashioned Christianity. This is the real Christianity, the realization that you are God.
Now, these are the Gnostics, and a name it would shock so much that I would hesitate to name it. But I heard one of the speakers who was... close to Norman Grubb. He had denied to me that he had any contact with Norman Grubb, but it turns out Norman Grubb published his first two books. And I heard this person in a debate in town, and interestingly enough, he said the Albigensians were good Bible-believing Christians. Now, the Albigensians were Gnostics. Very plainly, Gnostics. They believed in this mystical wisdom. They practiced vegetarianism to try to get closer to this. They believed you went inside and you basically developed this Christ consciousness. All matter was evil. All spirit was good. And and the Albigensians probably were treated cruelly. But that they were good Bible-believing Christians could never be said, and the Albigensians are considered martyrs in the New Age movement. You go into the New Age bookstores, and there's books after books on them. And I find it very interesting that this person who purported to be fighting many of the same things I was fighting was defending this aspect of it. But I find it now even more interesting to know that he was a disciple of one who was part of this network in Washington, D.C. that was established, and of which Barbara Marks Hubbard would say in a speech in Seattle in 1988, now all the resonating core groups with outwardly different purposes are merging and blending and coming together to do the one work.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Go right ahead. And certainly I think it's important that people understand that that we're basically talking about Christian mysticism, which has nothing to do with the Christianity based upon the Bible. The Albigensians, what they were around many centuries ago, weren't they?
You know, the Bible says that Mystery Babylon has corrupted the whole earth, basically, that it had corrupted from the beginning, had corrupted all races, all generations. And when you start looking at these things, they all have the same secrets. You go inside for wisdom. You don't depend on revealed teachings, the Bible, and you toss out creeds. Instead, you go inside and experience this thing, and then they come out with these glorious experiences that they learned, like Norman Grubb learned, that he was God himself. He was God himself, a God. And that God was in everything, and sometimes it's open pantheism, sometimes they stick an E-N in it and call it panentheism. But the deception is just about the same for both. It was Jeremiah, I believe, who said, "Oh Lord, I know that the way of man is not within himself. It is not within man that walketh to direct his steps." And Jesus had warned that the heart was deceitful and desperately wicked. Who could know it? And yet the whole encouragement of this group is you go inside, you meditate. As regards the Buckman style of meditation, moral rearmament, Peter and Eileen Caddy, the founders of Finhorn, met at a moral rearmament meeting. And Eileen Caddy practiced the Buckman style meditation every day to go to the outhouses at the Finhorn Foundation, where, incidentally, they openly deified Lucifer. And she would meditate and get directions on how they were to run this. And this group in Washington, they all were busy checking their guidance with each other. And they would seek this guidance, and then rather than strict scriptural testing, they would check their guidance with each other. The Variety would check his guidance with Glenn Clark. Glenn Clark would check his guidance with Sam Shoemaker and Variety, so on and so forth. And they measured themselves by themselves rather than using a biblical yardstick.
Well, of course, the whole thing really is so incredible and that it interlocks. And there's so many organizations out there. You mentioned Findhorn. I think that's over in Scotland, where it's the New Age Center.
It's like the Vatican City of the New Age.
Right, and of course, people go there, and of course, they meditate, and they come in contact with the gods or whatever they want to, but it is not a Christian center. There really are literally millions of people throughout the world who embraced this alternative religion, which is really based upon experience, on meditation, on coming to the realization that the Bible is wrong, the truth of the matter is we are all God. And when you suddenly begin to think of the absurdity of this, I mean, what are your standards then? Well, you make up your own standards. And the difficulty we have is that this movement is penetrating the Christian church today. And Christian mysticism is growing more and more. Of course, Christians are getting into the labyrinth and the deep meditation. And instead of looking to the scripture as the source of truth, they look to themselves. And we're going to be back here in just a moment with Constance Cumby as we begin evaluating further this amazing group called The Family. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course our guest this evening is Constance Cumby, and we're talking about the family. Go right ahead, Constance.
Well, the family came to my personal attention in a very real way, starting in 1988. They had been involved in some things probably much earlier. But in 1987, October of 1987, I received a telephone call from dear friends in Boulder, Colorado, saying they were going to go hear David Spangler speak the next night at the local Episcopalian church.
Now, I think for our listeners out there, David Spangler has written about the importance of the Luciferian initiation. I mean, here's a man who's talking about if you really want to get in touch with God, you got to go through this Luciferian initiation. What God is he talking about? He's certainly one of the leaders of the New Age.
David
but go ahead.
Spengler is very open about his God as Lucifer. He made no bones about it. His book, Reflections on the Christ, contains a chapter, Lucifer, Christ, and God, and Lucifer is a great being who made a great sacrifice for us. Benjamin Krem says the same thing about Lucifer. Lucis Trust by Alice Bailey started life as Lucifer Publishing Company. Lucifer is considered in this movement a great being, that Jehovah is an evil, inferior spirit, and that Lucifer is actually our planetary benefactor, that he made a sacrifice for us.
And, of course, this is basically plain old Gnosticism. And one of the great tragedies of today,
it's not outright Satanism.
Right, is that the Christian ministers never warned the Christians about the Gnostic influence in our society. I mean, most people look upon Gnosticism as a heresy that exists in the first and second centuries after Christ, first and second centuries A.D. They don't realize that it is prevalent today. Gnosticism has to do with knowledge, and knowledge has to do with the fact that there are two gods. There's the Christian inferior God that the Christians worship, the Christian God, and then there is the true God, who is Lucifer. And if you doubt that, you could just go up on the internet and type in Gnosticism, and you'll find all sorts of articles there that will tell you about the belief that Lucifer is the true God. How could you conceal this from countless millions of Americans that many people say they believe in God, but nobody ever asked them what God they believe in? They believe Lucifer is the good God, and we worship the bad God. And you can even go up on our website now, and we have another section called Other Videos in there. We actually have a little clip somebody posted recently. I believe Alex Jones has this up. And it's a Shriner talking about admitting that he believes that Lucifer is God, that he is actually Lucifer because he's doing good things all the time. It is the most amazing 3-minute YouTube clip you've ever seen. It's available at RadioLiberty.com or simply by Googling in YouTube Mason Lucifer. YouTube Mason Lucifer, you'll come right to it. It's the top of the list there. Go right ahead, Constance.
Well, it's true. There's been a great deal of silence in the Christian world on this, and it was difficult for me to understand because when I came out and discovered these things, I thought everybody would be shocked as I had been shocked. Well, I found that some of the people that were shocked were people that had been in the New Age movement that I showed the materials to, and they immediately repented and started giving me more details of things, and they said this movement was larger than I had any notion. And they said, you can't stop it. They sat there and said, I can take it. I can take some persecution. And it was as though God had opened his eyes and given him the grace to deal with it all at the same time. And many of these people have stayed out and stayed faithful over the years and have not gone back to the New Age temptations. But the shock to me was that there was either apathy in Christian circles on it, or there was outright hostility to any spreading of word against it. And that was difficult for me to understand until I finally discovered the dynamics of the family and what had transpired there, and the fact that some of their major financial benefactors, including the same Paul Temple that I spoke of, who was the president and co-founder of the Institute of Noetic Sciences, that he was a major financial benefactor for the group in Washington, D.C., for many people in the group as well, powerful people he had helped financially underwrite, such as Mark Hatfield, and that he was basically controlling purse strings. And how much of this was because people shared his ideological persuasion, and how much of it was because people didn't want to disrupt his pocketbook is hard to say.
I think it's important people understand who Mark Hatfield was. He was a United States Senator from Oregon, wasn't he?
Very powerful man. He'd been governor of Oregon for years, and then he was the United States Senator from Oregon for many years.
And he always posed as a Christian. We're going to be right back here with Constance Cumby. But, of course, what Christ did he worship? Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Constance Cumby, and go right ahead, Constance.
Well, we have quite a network. I discovered David Spangler was speaking, and the tape, and I laughed. I told my friends, prepare to be good and bored. He's not exactly the world's most dynamic speaker. And they called me back the next day, and indeed they laughed. They said, you were right about the boring part. He was rather soporific. But they said, hold on to your hat. He said something extremely significant. We're sending you the tapes. And when the tapes arrived, I listened to them carefully. And he said the real reason he was in Boulder was to attend the latest in a series of ongoing meetings he had been having between top-level New Agers and high-level evangelical leaders, and that the last one had been at Hollyhock Farms in British Columbia. And this particular one had taken place at the Gold Lake Ranch in Boulder, Colorado.
Now, why would Christian leaders be meeting with the cultist people who are into this Luciferian doctrine?
Well, the story that was being passed around and the official cover was that these were Christians seeking to evangelize the New Agers. That was an out-and-out lie. There may have been some Christians who attended who may have believed that was the reason they were enticed there. There were some who were initially properly shocked. There were a couple who did leak some materials to some of the other investigators on this. But the truth of the matter is this was a New Age sponsored event. This was a New Age organized event. And its purpose was to compromise Christians and to neutralize Christians and really to buy silence on New Age issues. And I just recently, in the last week, obtained a tape of Paul Temple having a conference on Christianity and the New Age. This was a 1993 conference. I have others of a 1995 conference. And from conference recording system or service. And Paul Temple and Barbara Marks Hubbard and Paul Temple were both participants in this. Barbara Marks Hubbard was praised as brilliant as usual, Barbara, by Paul Temple. But Barbara Marks Hubbard was laughing about how they had compromised some of the resistant people at this conference. And she said some of these old ministers that were there were very resistant to and what they had to say. And she said, but they got in the hot tub with them the first night, and they softened a little bit. And then they
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Constance Cumby. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Constance Cumby. And before we go on, Constance, I do want you to get your website out and tell people how they can get your material and even hear your radio programs, which you do on a regular basis.
Yes, I do. I have a blog spot. It's worldwideweb.cumby.blogspot. That's spelled blogspot.com. And I have many resources and links on the side, including a download that you can make of some of the PowerPoint presentations I've been developing. And you can go to that link, and that will take you to a spot where you can download some of those items. I'm going to be putting up more things, including back radio interviews. And there is a lady now who is working on a website that is going to mirror the content and make it even more easily accessible than it already is on the blog spot. That is, and the radio is worldwideweb.themicroeffect.com. And we are on Tuesdays from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock Eastern Time, 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock Pacific Time, and Fridays at the same time.
Okay, fine. And first, Constance has been telling us about what has actually happened is that the New Agers, the occultists, the Gnostics, these people who embrace a Luciferian religion, were able to convince a number of Christian leaders to come and meet with them, that maybe that we could work, they could work things out with them, and how, of course, Barbara Marks Hubbard, you know, openly bragged about how they'd begun to compromise the Christian ministers and leaders, especially when they all got in the hot tub together. Especially when they all got in the hot tub together. And these people are frankly Luciferians, ladies and gentlemen. If you've read the writings of Barbara Marx Hubbard, there's no question where she's coming from. Her book, The Revelation, the Book of Co-Creation, we have the original manuscript where she talks about the necessity of killing a quarter of the population of the world because they do not, or will not, refuse to evolve to a higher level. And then she goes on to say, but that is not your job, my dear, that is ours, for we are the riders of the pale horse death. And her writings were channeled to her by a spirit. She calls it the Christ spirit. I don't think it's a Christ spirit. I think it's a spirit. There's no question. Here's one of the wealthiest women in the entire world leading this movement, ran for the presidency back in, or the vice president of the United States on the Democratic, for the Democratic nomination for the vice presidency, I believe in 1984, wasn't it?
I believe it was the 84 convention where her name was placed in nomination.
Fortunately, she lost to Geraldine Ferraro, but these are very prominent people. She's been a consultant for our U.S. military, introducing occultism into various branches of the military. These are not the bit players. These are the leaders of this whole movement to transform the world. And this is the X factor that I've been seeking for years. And Constance, of course, has documented this beautifully in her writings and so much of the material. But you picked the story up there, Constance.
Right. Well, it's as Barbara Marx Hubbard wrote another book called The Hunger of Eve, and there's fascinating documentation in there, and also the references to Paul Temple the year after this, 1988, and his participation with her in a number of ventures, including the Soviet-American dialogues, which he led at her invitation. But the thing that was so disturbing to me was listening to the tape of hers laughing and bragging about how they had compromised these poor old ministers. And she said the key to this was having experiences in common with these people. And that's one of the tactics. They have the small group exercises, and then they have the trust exercises, the joint games together. Those are not games for physical exercise. Those are games designed to tear down barriers between people and to achieve a goal that the New Agers have of believing that we are all interconnected and interrelated up to and including God.
And, of course, they're very effective at it, but, of course, the difficulty is that they've concealed this, and the ministers who participated now have become apologists for the New Age, and they're concealing this. And we're talking about some of the leading Christian evangelists today, whether they know it or not. But the fact that they're not bringing this information out and identifying these people and where they're working at the highest levels of our government certainly does a disservice to our nation and to the Christian faith. And, of course, these people, you know, many of them are named and identified in a book written by one of the leaders of this movement, a woman named Marilyn Ferguson, who wrote a book called The Aquarian Conspiracy. You can get the book. It was written back in 1980. It's out of print now, but you can get it on Amazon, an important book to have to begin to identify who these people are working at the highest echelon levels of our government, who are certainly in sympathy with their movement. In fact, one of them is today the leading foreign policy advisor to a man named Obama, who is the presidential candidate. Of course, Marilyn Ferguson talks about Zbigniew Brzezinski in her book back in 1980 and how his philosophy, you know, parallels there. Well, of course, you'd expect it would. The organization he created called the Trilateral Commission has a logo, and you can find it on the Internet. This, the Lucius, pardon me, trilateralist.org, trilateralist or trilateral, I think it's trilateral.
What was so interesting was Paul Temple.
Right, go ahead.
Paul Temple talked about Marilyn Ferguson. In opening one of his conferences, he said, the problem with the New Age, he said there's no official spokesperson for the New Age. Well, he was coming as close to it as anybody could possibly come. In fact, Lois Harman basically was on his payroll. But he said if there was an official spokesperson, probably that Marilyn Ferguson would be in. He said that she's not with us this conference. So he had basically mentioned Marilyn Ferguson's work as much a spokesperson for the New Age movement, but Barbara Marks Hubbard has been very much a spokesperson for it. David Spangler has been very much a spokesperson for it. But maybe one of the trickiest of all has been Paul Temple, because he has indeed stood there with feet in both camps and with endorsement of prominent Christian leaders, including Billy Graham himself, and has played a game of being a spokesperson for the Christian community.
And, of course, the tragedy is the Christian community doesn't understand, because nobody's telling them, and our Christian leaders are not telling us about the Luciferian movement that is directing so much of what's going on in the world today. But go right ahead, Constance.
Well, in Paul Temple talked, let me back up. Mayor Alice Bailey said that in the New Age, the only sin would be the sin of separation. This was a theme that Paul Temple was beating upon and beating upon at his various conferences. And he talked about a seminar he went to, and he said it was a very excellent presentation by somebody from the Dallas, I think he called it the Dallas Biblical Institute. I think he was referring to the Dallas Seminary. And he said that he listened to the professor's otherwise excellent presentation, and he went up and told him that and pointed to several things in his talk that were considered divisive even by Christian standards. And he said that the professor said to him, and he said he would never forget this. He said that I would rather be divided in truth than be united in error. And the entire New Age audience laughed raucously with Paul Temple at this simpleton professor who had this anarchic, or not an archaic, not anarchic, but archaic belief. And the time and time again, they pointed to things being divisive. We had to believe we were all interconnected, interrelated.
And that is one of the great problems today, is that Christians don't understand that this whole movement is to transform our society, and they really are transforming our society. And you get into the background of the Trilateral Commission, for instance. Of course, their symbol, the logo is basically three sixes joined together in the middle by an upside-down cross. You will find the occult influence in all of these so-called secret and semi-secret organizations, whether it be the Council on Foreign Relations, or the Bilderbergers, the Club of Rome, the Trilateral Commission, and, of course, the family as well. So go right ahead, Constance.
Well, I think Barbara Marks Hubbard may have hit the nail on the head when she said that all of the groups with outwardly different purposes were merging and blending and coming together. She referred to these groups as resonating core groups, and that they were now merging and blending and coming together to do the one work. And the one work that they were doing was certainly not to win the world to Jesus.
And I think it's so vitally important that we begin to understand that the family is an organization centered in both New York and Washington, D.C. A number of our politicians are affiliated with it. It puts on the presidential prayer breakfast every year, and Christians come from all over the world and pay large sums of money for the presidential prayer breakfast.
Now, there was a distinctly more global agenda to it, if I could go there, Dr. Musk.
You go right ahead. Don't let me dissuade you. We want to get your information out.
Okay. Well, page 95 of Abraham Variety's book, and this is it's a book about Abraham Variety, Modern Viking, the story of Abraham Variety, pioneer in Christian leadership by Norman Grubb. And then it said, In 1945 came the devastating news that stunned the world of President Roosevelt's sudden death. And then it went on to, they were sitting there, and they had a meeting at Marian Johnson's home. Remember, this was the gal with the home on Embassy Road. And said over 90 persons crowded into the big drawing room, some sitting on the floor to hear messages from various senators. And David Lawrence of the U.S. News and World Report said it was an evening of challenge, preparation, and dedication before San Francisco, Abrams said. The San Francisco Conference for the Formation of the United Nations Organization was about to start. Members of the U.S. delegation had suggested to Variety that he should form from the representatives of the various nations a, quote, spiritual United Nations, unquote, who would seek God's guidance and will to the proceedings. He held some preparatory meetings with members of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and the Foreign Affairs Committee of the House of Representatives and with other great and some from other governments, and then flew to San Francisco to attend the great gathering. And it looks like he had a very direct role in the creation of the United Nations, as well as what was taking place in Washington with the network. By this, they had created neutral ground where leaders of both parties could come together. I mean, who's going to say they're against prayer except for a few isolated atheists? And so it looked like it was safe. It looked like it was under both Christian and patriotic principles, but in essence they were setting up some globalist machinery that was the exact same plan that all the New Agers, that all the Theosophists, that the World Federalists, that the moral rearmament people were talking about. They were all talking about this third way revolution, this third force.
No, because they were all also in favor of a world government,
yes.
a new world revolution, and of course installing this coming world leader. We might even add that they certainly want a world currency, a world economic system, which of course is what's unfolding today as the whole old economic system is crumbling. People do not understand this is all long-term planning. Thing is towards the establishment of this one world government under the one world ruler.
Well, they had also been some, they had thrown some deliberate deception up. Looking at this book and just a little bit of information, and I'm sure they have not shown all their cards, but the information that was revealed from this group, and with a Christian veneer, but still they're tantalizing bits of information that come through. Interestingly enough, their Dutch sponsorship, they said the person who had worked closest with them in Europe was Queen Wilhelmina, the former Queen of the Netherlands. And this is interesting, and I'm not going to judge God in charge of judging her. However, it should be noted that she was Krishnamurti's foremost follower in Europe.
And of course, and for our listeners, so Krishnamurti was the person who was supposed to be the world leader. This was one they picked. What was he supposed to come out in the 1920s?
Maitreya.
Right.
Krishnamurti was supposed to be Maitreya. He was supposed to lead the world into the new world order.
Right.
They had written that people didn't understand how bloody that this difference this would, that it would go in place, even if a theosophist had to bloody their fingers in the process. Well, bloody their fingers they certainly did in some interesting places.
Like the Second World War. First World War. Possibly
First and Second World War certainly looked like there was some bloodying of fingers. But fascinatingly, in Mexico from 1926 to 1938, and also Costa Rica had revolutions where theosophists were installed, people who believed that Krishnamurti was to be the new world messiah. And in Europe, the person who believed in him was Queen Wilhelmina, and Dutch national radio broadcast what was supposed to be Krishnamurti's acceptance speech, that his own spirit totally exited his body, and that this new spirit took over his body. And then the new order was supposed to have gone forward under Krishnamurti, and the League of Nations was machinery that had been put in place to assist with this.
What year was that, Constance?
1929. Enough when, after that disappointment, we know what else transpired later that year, and it's very similar to some things that are transpiring right now this week.
That is a very very interesting analogy.
It was
but
the
of course,
start
Krishnamurti.
Of the, stock market crash and the start of the Great Depression.
Krishnamurti decided he didn't want to be the world leader.
It may be that God just wasn't ready.
Right.
I sort of think that, and then also they've thrown some deliberate deception over that as well, because the official story was that Annie Besant returned tens of millions of dollars to the World Teacher Trust Fund, but I'm now learning from some of the old archive journals and things, and I've learned not to take their pronouncements at face value. They do throw blinds up. But they were continuing to hold the Krishnamurti summer camp, and they had the castle at Variety. In fact, Cornelius Vanderbriggen wrote me and told me that it had been torn down. That was a lie. The building is still there, very much there. And Krishnamurti's camp in Europe, then in Holland, Camp Ullman, was used as a concentration camp by the Nazis.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment, guys. John Sinsko, right ahead. We've got 3 more minutes in this segment of the program, and then
okay.
We'll go on from there to the next hour. Go right ahead.
Okay, well, it appears that the Krishnamurti apparatus was in place, and whatever transpired to let them think they weren't going forward with that or it wasn't going to go the direction, but it looks to me like some urban legends were invented, and that Krishnamurti always had this disappointment, and it might be that God just plain wasn't ready, because the plan was that Krishnamurti's spirit was to totally exit his body, which was to be the vessel or the vehicle for the Christ, and the Christ not referring to Jesus, but an Antichrist in effect. And when Krishnamurti delivered a speech saying, "Truth is a pathless land, and I don't want you to follow anybody, including following me. I want you to be so aware that truth is a pathless land, even abandon my teachings." And that was the line, but they did continue to hold the summer camps. Krishnamurti had his followers both in Holland, abroad, and in the United States and California. And one fascinating follower who also intersects many of these same paths was Aldous Huxley, and quite a crowd in Hollywood. And they it was quite a little network. They were opposed to the United States becoming involved in World War II, and they were advocating a form of pacifism. They had their vegetarian picnics, but there was activity taking place on both sides of the Atlantic, and some very sophisticated preparation in the summer school in Switzerland. And there were many, many factions, I guess that's what I'm trying to say, that were coming together on this. But the one that is probably the most disturbing to me personally, and which has touched me the greatest, has been that of the family in Washington, D.C. Doug Coe's group, the International Foundation, International Fellowship, and the lengths that they went to try to conceal this.
And, of course, they are then the extension of Abraham Verghese's original organization. Is that correct?
Yes. When Variety was retiring, there were some people who were brought on and made part of the organization. One was Richard Halverson, who was a pastor of a church that I think Henrietta Mears was active in Hollywood, and he came to Washington, eventually became both.
We're going to have to interrupt you there. We're going to be back in just a moment to wrap up the program here for this. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Sydney Constance, of course, is giving us the background of this organization. It's called The Family, which is Sydney, headed by Doug Coe today, with a number of congressmen affiliated with this. Keep their people really working in every branch of government and really working to influence our legislative leaders. And the fact that you've never heard of the family is simply a reflection of the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. Well, of course, there's a book written by Jeff Charlotte. We have interviews with Jeff Charlotte and others on the family. We'll be putting together a 4-tape set on the family. We think it's vitally important you understand simply one more facet of everything going on today. Now, if you really would like an overview of what's happening, we do have a wonderful DVD. It's actually a talk that Constance gave at a conference a couple of years ago here. It's called The Emergence. It's a DVD, and Constance gives you the overview of what she has learned going back to about 1980 when she first became aware of, we're talking 28 years, when she first became aware of this movement, which is actually a Luciferian movement, a Gnostic movement, working at the highest levels of our society. And as I say, for those of you who have any question, you go up on the internet and type in Gnosticism, and you'll find out that the Gnostics worship Lucifer. And many of these people are at the highest levels of our government today. They say they believe in God. You know, they know the Christians speak, but of course they worship a different God. Well, then of course we have a wonderful four-tape set of our interview with Constance, and four interviews with Constance Cumby. We call it, I think, the Wisdom of Constance Cumby. Anyway, it's a four-tape, four-CD set of interviews with Constance Cumby. They are available through Radio Liberty. You need to get her information. Unfortunately, her book, The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow, is out of print, although we're hoping that it'll be back in print before long. Will it be back in print, Constance?
I'm hoping so. I'm trying to tell your friend to return my calls.
Okay, fine. Well, I'll tell you what, I'll give him a call and then get after him for not returning your calls, because I have trouble getting through to him as well, so don't feel bad. And, although it is infuriating when people don't return calls, but I will get to him.
Well, I understand. Sometimes mine don't always get returned either, because sometimes it's just you mean to, and then so much piles up on the desk that...
But I know last time I talked to Tom, he really wanted to get the book back in print. The book is called Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow. You can probably get it up on Amazon.com. Used copies of the book, but certainly we hope there'll be a new one out. I hope there'll be an index in it and an update to bring us up to date, because this is the X factor. This is what's going on behind the scenes today. So the four-tape set on The Emergence, the four-tape set on The Wisdom of Constance Cumby. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. If you'd like to hear a Mason talking about how he is Lucifer and doing the good work of Lucifer, it's up on our webpage at radioliberty.com. You scroll down to other videos. There's videos, and then there's other videos. And then scroll down there and look for something. It should be under Mason, Lucifer, something of the sort. Lots of great information there. There are little clips, YouTube clips, and we want you to go through many of those when you have a chance. They will help to educate you about every aspect of what's going on, and we're constantly expanding that. And then, of course, please read our newsletters. Watch our videos, listen to our radio programs. Doesn't cost anything, but of course your job is to get other people listening to our programs, which are heard live 5 hours a day, 4 hours a day, are actually posted there on our website at radioliberty.com. Again, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Please don't forget that we're having an all-day conference here in the Monterey Bay on the 26th of October. You're going to have reservations, because we're serving lunch, but we're really getting an excellent response. We're going to have Dr. Blaylock, Joanna Michelson will be there, and certainly Patrick Wood, telling you what you ought to be doing financially. And so please pray for America, but pray for Radio Liberty. Well, Dr. Stanback here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, and supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, now, for the next hour, once again, the views of Constance Cumby, as we explore this organization, powerful organization, one of the most powerful organizations in the country today, and yet, of course, most Americans, most conservatives, most Christians have never heard of the family. So, Constance, you go ahead and pick up the story.
Yes, sir.
Go right ahead.
One of the things that has to be borne in mind is that this is an international operation. They have gained pretty effective power with the United States government, but many, many other governments as well. Michael Timmis is a lawyer connected with the family. He happens to be Catholic, and he was discipled by Douglas Coe within this network. He came from the Detroit area, was a lawyer that attended many of the same schools I attended in Michigan. And Michael Timmis has a new book out on the work, his work with this. And he said that he had personally gone on behalf of Doug Coe to 148 nations. One of the places that he went on behalf of Doug Coe was to meet with the Dalai Lama. And he had been instructed by Doug Coe to call the Dalai Lama Your Holiness. Doug Coe has his a foreign policy. They have basically, that was one of the, I think it was James Baker, who had reported somewhat amusingly that he went somewhere and to meet with the head of one of the countries, and the head of one of the countries said, "I greet you in the name of Doug Coe."
Yes, that must be. He must have wondered what this is all about. You know, but of course, Doug Coe is one of the most powerful men in the world today, and yet there's probably not one in 100,000 Americans who's ever really heard of him or understand the power that he exerts.
Now, I had the opportunity to talk to Wayne Manston, another secular commentator who has written on the family, and one of the reasons I've spoken out, Dr. Monteith, is that, remember People's Temple and Jim Jones?
Absolutely.
And they were busy blaming that thing on fundamentalist Christians, and that it was one of our agendas, and if they didn't rope in us crazy fundamentalists, by golly, we were going to have lots more Jonestown.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's going to be drinking the Kool-Aid, right?
Right, and of course, I got into the old New Age directories and discovered to my amazement then that Jim Jones had been part of the New Age movement from the get-go.
And, of course, I think there's another thing, and that is the New Age has infiltrated our intelligence organizations. They've infiltrated every aspect of our society, but I believe that they're working both within the military and certainly within the intelligence organizations as well. And then many people have always thought that what happened there in Guyana under Jim Jones was, of course, simply a trial for what would happen in the future.
Well, it certainly was a case, an example of what could happen when people were totally possessed and given over, and then harnessed a spirit of religious fanaticism with it, and combine that with cult-like tactics. And Jeff Charlotte said that he had received some threats from people said, "You know what we do to traitors. You know what happens to traitors."
Right, and it was Jeff Charlotte that actually infiltrated the organization. He didn't know what it was all about, but certainly when he realized it, because it got out, he wrote about it extensively in a book called The Family, which we'll have, we hope, very soon. It should be back in print, but we will have a four-tape set. This is something that should be shouted from the housetops. Don't you know about the Presidents of Prayer Breakfast? But most people don't. Go right ahead.
Okay, well, there were other people who were discipled as part of this, and it's made some things make sense to me. some names that were surprising, who were proteges of Abraham variety. One was Harold Bredesen, and he had been discipled by Abraham variety and worked for him and under him, and he went on and formed a number of movements, and again, they were this emphasis on mysticism, going inside for wisdom, and I never will forget it. I had personal encounters there as well. Harold Bredesen told me he had not met Cornelius Vanderbreggen. Cornelius Vanderbreggen was sent to me by an extremely anti-Jewish organization, Liberty Lobby, to talk me out of opposition to them. And I suddenly remembered where I had seen his name and shouted from the housetops by Pat Robertson. And we had a conversation about it. And the next day, people came by from the prayer breakfast in honor of Israel. And I said, well, if you're with us, you might be interested in seeing this. And I turned to the book where the Cornelius Vanderbreggen had led Pat Robertson to the Lord. And then I showed them Cornelius Vanderbreggen's flyer that he was giving seminars for Liberty Lobby, who that particular year had disrupted the prayer breakfast in honor of Israel by posting notes under the door of each and every room in the hotel saying that the prayer breakfast would be canceled the next day and that they were to meet in front of the Israeli embassy to protest instead, and they had to get up. I never will forget it. That couple gasped in amazement, and then they said, but here it says that he left and he never ever saw him again. And I said, I don't believe that for 2 seconds. He knew exactly what was in Pat Robertson's book, and it was proud as punch of it. Well, they came with Harold Bredesen himself, and Bredesen and I were talking, and he quoted all the right scripture verses, and he told me he had never met Vanderbreggen that night, a fine friend who at the time headed Campus Crusade's book division, and this man was a very fine Christian, and he got curious and went over to see what was happening, and he said that Harold Bredesen and Cornelius Vanderbreggen were walking around arm in arm all night talking about all their old exploits together. And I'm assuming that it had to be in the days of the Abraham Variety connection, because Pat Robertson's father also was connected with Abraham Variety.
Hold that thought, Constance. Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Constance is bringing out some of the relationships between prominent Christians and the family. Prominent Christians who are regularly heard on television all across America and look to as leaders of the Christian movement.
On the air.
Okay, go right ahead, Constance.
Okay. Had to turn down my husband's jazz. I could all at once. That's all I could hear. I'm sorry. Okay. This was interesting because there were some massive efforts to stop any work from leaking out on the New Age movement at all. And the Campus Crusade book representative came back and reported to us that the two gentlemen had been walking around arm in arm reporting on all their old escapades together, and Harold Bredesen had stood up and told the whole room that he was a hero, that by forcing Huntington House to come up with $25,000 to buy out his stock interest, he had delayed the publication of Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow by 6 months.
That's versus Constance's book, which they did not want to get out under any circumstances.
They were frantic to stop it. And again, these were links I didn't fully understand, and they didn't make much sense to me. They were disjointed until I found out about some of the massive financial interests and the intertwining of this network with the Prayer Breakfast Network in Washington, D.C. In 1988, I had information, thanks to a sleuth from Colorado who had called and had pursued this and obtained the telephone number of Doug Coe, by using her newly found butterhead credentials for a group that was pretty much a New Age caucus within the evangelical world. They had printed her name on their letterhead without her permission, and she was tracking down information on it. And when she called me for information, I suggested she look into the Gold Lake conference that had taken place at the same time.
This is a specific conference at the Gold Lake Conference, which was where, of course, they got the New Ages and the Christian leaders together.
Gold Lake Conference was October 23rd, 24th, and 25th near
what
Boulder,
year? What
Colorado.
Year? What
1987.
Year? 1987.
A couple of months after the harmonic convergence of October 16th and 17th. And this was at Colorado, and it was organized by Paul Temple's children, Robin and Logan Klein, who sent the invitations. And it was co-chaired. The two that were invited to be co-chairs of the meeting were Barbara Marks Hubbard and Doug Coe. But the official version, at least what was leaked out to us, was that Barbara Marks Hubbard had chaired the event at the invitation of the evangelicals, but that was a cover story. It now appears that the event was organized by the New Agers. I'm sure that some of the Christians who went were told that it was an opportunity to evangelize New Agers. But very clearly, it was a deliberate campaign to neutralize, compromise, and even convert Christians to the New Age perspective. And interestingly enough, Doug Coe's secretary said directly to my investigator that she said the most wonderful thing about the conference was the Christians who went were not at all closed to the New Age.
And, of course, Doug Coe is the man who today leads the family that has tentacles into literally almost every major nation in the world today, but specifically into Washington, D.C., manipulating legislation, manipulating what's going on behind the scenes in both political parties. So
Doug Coe went to Washington he was recruited, as the story went, by Mark Hatfield. Now, the story is that Mark Hatfield said in turn he had been converted to Christianity by Doug Coe. It's hard to sort out what is truth on this and what is a created urban legend. But at any rate, Doug Coe was running this operation.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
Okay. My dog just walked in.
Okay, fine.
I'm going to jazz one thing after another. Okay, I probably should have done this from my office, but I'd never get up in the morning.
Oh, no. We're doing fine. You go right ahead.
Okay. Okay, where was I, Dr. Monty?
The dog just came into the room, but Doug Coe had been recruited in the organization.
Well, Doug Coe didn't come in on the dog.
So. Right, okay.
Okay. Okay. Anyway, Doug Coe supposedly went to Washington to head this at Mark Hatfield's recruiting, but Paul Temple was involved in it long before Doug Coe came to Washington. And it looks like Paul Temple was pulling many strings in this group right from the beginning, from Abraham Variety pre-Doug Coe, and that he was financially intertwined. Now, when I'm talking about Paul Temple, I'm not just talking about anybody in the New Age movement. I am talking about a extremely wealthy man, a very slick, even dangerous man, a Harvard lawyer, a man who's been a top business executive, and who basically has been shepherding this movement that has your top New Agers. People like Marilyn Ferguson, Willis Harmon was on his payroll, who certainly was a major figure in the New Age movement. Barbara Marks Hubbard is a regular recipient of funds from him. And interestingly, he's writing checks for Krampus Crusade and Arthur Blessed Ministries and a few others, but many more checks for Waldorf Schools and the All Seasons Chalice in Washington and in Boulder, Colorado. It looks like it's a combination of Findhorn and a witch's coven. And he's having conferences, and he's conferring with people, and he is referring over and over about the dangers of fundamentalists who will not compromise. Now, Doug Coe is out there. Doug Coe is cooperating with this man, whether it's for financial purposes or whether it's because he's a true believer in what he is doing. I don't know which one is worse, if he's doing it because of the finances. But at any rate, this is part of a much larger agenda. And under the guise of Christianity, they are sending people around the world. They're roping in this network. They've supported dictators. Doug Coe has given speeches in Washington telling people that they have to at least have the intensity of Hitler. He's pointed to what a dedicated corps can do and what it accomplished under Hitler, where they were all of one mind, what it accomplished under Mao Tse-tung, where they were all of one mind, so on and so forth. Cleverly given speeches. But I think that what the hidden dangers is, the hidden danger on this is, that not only is it compromising, it's neutralizing Christians, it's compromising Christian theology, it has bought silence on the agenda that the New Agers have, and it's also bringing opprobrium and hatred upon Christians now that books such as Jeff Charlotte and Wayne Madsen and others are coming out and exposing the agenda and pointing to features of it that may even be criminal. And, of course, now it's being pointed to as an example of spreading Christian fundamentalism. Now, if it truly were that, I may be silent about it. But knowing that this agenda is to neutralize the world or even to be a resonating core group now merging and blending with the other resonating core groups to do the one work, and knowing that their one work most assuredly is not to promote Jesus Christ but to promote Lucifer, then at this point, if Christians are going to take the rap for something that possibly is illegal, I think it's high time that, just like Jonestown was given back to the New Agers, it's about time that we handed this back as well.
Well, we've certainly talked about the Jeff Charlotte and to Wayne Madsen. I think they're both people honest, but I think that they do not understand this. This is the antithesis of evangelical Christianity. It is being sold as evangelical Christianity. They see it as evangelical Christianity. But if Christians really, if Christians infiltrated the Christian movement and is intent upon its destruction.
I think Wayne Madsen may have a better understanding of it, and he's both gentlemen have done an extraordinary job of connecting many dots. But when Madsen and I talked off the air on this, he said he wasn't at all surprised by the New Age things because the Nazis had been into those things too, and he said every 50 years they drag it out, they call it something different, and then basically spread the same teachings. He was not at all surprised to find the New Age links on it.
Because, you know, many people honestly believe, of course, that Adolf Hitler was a Christian and this was simply a Christian movement. Of course, nothing could be further from the truth. The whole foundation of Nazism was in the occult, and the whole foundation of what's going on today is in the occult. And the fact that this is rarely mentioned by our leading Christian ministries simply is a reflection of the degree of control and the influence that these occult organizations have over the Christians, evangelical Christian movement, and what the American people think. So go right ahead, Dick Constance.
Okay, well, there's so much. Where would you like me to go, Dr. Munson?
Well, I think that we ought to get into what the family actually is, how it operates. Its influence on our legislative process, backing of the presidential prayer breakfast. I think all of these things are so important that hardly anybody in Christendom realizes the presidential prayer breakfast is not organized by the president, although apparently the president's press office will talk about it, and usually the president is there. But he is there, of course, at the behest of this organization, which has very little to do with Christianity, although they use a Christian veneer to conceal their true thoughts, objectives, and goals.
It's also a very big fundraiser.
Hold that thought. All right, go right ahead.
Well, the presidential prayer breakfast, and there's not just the presidential prayer breakfast. This thing has been set up virtually all over the world. But in the United States, we have tremendous networks that are connected to this. We have the presidential prayer breakfast, but then the states have prayer breakfasts, which are part of the prayer breakfast network, and mayors and councilmen. And it's a tremendous network. It's a network with tremendous reach, and it is connected to the Washington, D.C. outfit. And the Washington event is a large fundraiser for the family. Now, I understand everybody pays their something like 800 guests, am I correct? Maybe more than that. And they pay $475 a ticket for to go to this prayer breakfast and rub elbows with other very powerful people. So it's a source of funds, and it's also a force of power and influence, and it's also something that the New Agers, just like they were pointing to Jonestown without shame and saying, if we don't shut these Christians down, we'll have more Jonestowns. And now we have people that are pointing to this and saying, if we don't shut this down, our whole United States government is going to be subverted to fundamentalist Christianity. And if fundamentalist is one thing, this network is not. They've made it very clear. They say Jesus but nothing. But I think that Wayne Madsen is correct when he said they're using Jesus in the sense of a logo, a unifying theme, but it's not really about Jesus. It's about power, control, a network, and this is interesting too, Barbara Marx Hubbard. Remember the Soviet-American dialogue process, and that may have been the real start, the launch of the New World Order. And this is Barbara Marx Hubbard's book, The Hunger of Eve. And she said, Paul Temple, president of Energy Capital and chairman of the board of the Institute of Noetic Sciences, was the master of ceremonies. He asked the Soviets to stand up to be welcomed. They stood, those sophisticated communists, and she named some. And then how they started clapping. And then... And while this was going on, Paul stood there smiling, and it was a very political event, and again, direct connections. This man had been with the Prayer Breakfast Network since 1944, and here he was heading this powerful New Age organization, and then he was a catalyzing figure on the links and the basically many pressures to stop word from coming out against the New Age movement emanated from this group. When we were trying to obtain the tapes and to find out exactly what had happened at Gold Lake, and when Kathleen Hayes, the brave lady who did some digging on this, spoke to Fellowship Foundation in Washington, D.C. in July of 1988. She actually talked to Art Lindsley, who was over there going through the tapes and handling this for Doug Coe, and he was also a former board member of SCP in Berkeley, but he was also with the C.S. Lewis Institute in Washington, D.C.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here with Constance. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Constance was just talking about, of course, this meeting that was held at Gold Lake in the late 1980s, and of course, this is where the Christian leaders got together with the people from the occult, from the New Age, and they were going to see what they could work out, what things they had in common. Well, of course, they recorded the meetings. Constance wanted to get the tapes and really find out what was really said, and every barrier was put in the way. The one thing that these people fear is exposure. I mean, they have nothing to conceal. Why are they concealing it? But they specifically didn't want Constance Cumbie to get hold of the tapes of their meeting with the leading Christian leaders and the occult. And of course, we pick up the story there, Constance.
Well, that was so interesting. It was kind of startling to me because, you know, you think that you're fairly unknown, and Kathleen made this call, and she was directed by by Doug Cole's secretary to talk to Art Lindsley. And Art Lindsley asked her, I said, why do you want these tapes? And she said to him, why are you being so secretive? And he said, I'm not being secretive, he said, but Constance Cumby desperately wanted to get a hold of these tapes. And I'm just wondering what your motive was, that's all. And she said, well, I don't know what Constance's motive was, but if you're doing anything that important with New Agers, it needs to be covered in prayer. And then he opened up and started talking about it, and then disclosed he was having dinner with Barbara Marks Hubbard in Washington, D.C. that coming Sunday evening. And, you know, many people were furious that I brought this out because they honestly, in their naivete, thought that Barbara Marks Hubbard was on the verge of converting to Christianity and we had spoiled this by revealing this.
Well, of course, hope springs eternal, but of course these people are truly diabolical. I mean, certainly the one thing they hate more than anything, you know, is Christianity, and they want to destroy it. They're doing a very good job. Their agents working on the Supreme Court took God and prayer out of our schools and the Ten Commandments out of our courtrooms and out of our schoolrooms, and they have an intense hatred for Christianity, but they can neutralize it by appearing to be so benign. But basically, these are people who, according to Barbara Marks Hubbard in her own writings, talks about the necessity of killing a quarter of the population in the world.
This is interesting because this had, this particular revelation was after Gold Lake, but before I had gotten to the bottom of Gold Lake in 1988. 1987, fall of 1987, I am told by another talk show host, Jan Michelson, who was with WCKY in Cincinnati and now was with WHO in Des Moines, that he had interviewed Barbara Marks Hubbard on his program, and that somebody called in and asked some questions, and she was perturbed about it, and that she said to him, fundamentalists, she said, they're all over the place like gnats, and nothing but contempt for us. She laughed at a later Paul Temple event about the hot tubs and we needed common experience. And basically they see us as naive simpletons.
Well, I think that sometimes certain Christians really are incapable of understanding because they don't understand the nature of the enemy, and they do not understand Gnosticism or how it permeates every aspect of our society today.
Now, that certainly doesn't mean that somebody is hopelessly beyond God's reach if they've gotten into this, because I do believe that everybody deserves one kind warning. Barbara Marks Hubbard certainly had hers. I spent considerable time with her personally, at her invitation, talking to her about this. I will say this, the lady does do a wonderful job of almost persuaded, and basically the game plan is to keep you from going out and talking to others. But my experience is with New Agers is that they usually, if they're going to come out of it, they come out of it fairly soon. They don't spend a lot of time meditating on it, and when they come out, they make a clean break. And usually they don't even want to touch the things that that had taken them to that point, because they never want to go back to that point again. And so people need to understand that there are times that New Agers will feign a great deal of interest, and they'll ask you to explain this and explain this and explain this. Well, if it goes on and for 2 years they're asking you to explain this and explain that, chances are what they're doing is trying to keep you from talking to others.
I have no question at all. In fact, I think I told you that Marilyn Ferguson actually contacted me by email after one of my newsletters came out talking about her book, The Aquarian Conspiracy, and of course she was saying what a wonderful Christian she was, and of course I invited her to come on the program, but for some strange reason, she really didn't seem to want to. Well, Marilyn Ferguson, of course, for those who don't remember, wrote the book, The Aquarian Conspiracy. She's certainly one of the leaders of this whole world Luciferian movement.
And it may be that...
Hold that thought for just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, our guest, Constance Cumby, and go right ahead, Constance.
Well, it may well be that Marilyn Ferguson herself is influenced by the family network. Interestingly enough, when I was invited to observe an event at her home in 1984, and I took two others with me, and I was shocked to have somebody from Campus Crusade, who said they worked closely with Bill and Vonette Bright, offer to show me around, and I thought, well, maybe they're here doing missionary work too, and then they started telling me about hypnosis tapes I could get to relieve jet lag. And then later I noticed in Marilyn Ferguson's newsletters the very same person was doing her personnel screening. But Marilyn Ferguson was reportedly mentored by Willis Harmon. Willis Harmon was on Paul Temple's payroll, and he was acting as an administrator of the Institute of Noetic Sciences. So this whole thing may be far more intertwined than we think.
Well, I think they've thoroughly infiltrated the evangelical movement, and pretending to be evangelicals, they've neutralized the movement, and this is the real problem we face today, because most Christians will accept somebody, they claim to be a Christian, they can talk Christianese, but of course they're not there to push the gospel of Jesus Christ, but to undermine the gospel of Jesus Christ. And until people understand the true nature of the evil that we are up against, you can't understand so much of what's going on today.
Now, one of the things that has troubled me, and this is sorting it out, and I think it's a great deal of prayer and wisdom has to go into this, but I frankly have been very worried since the 80s, thinking that people with gold, with skills, of the Watergate type were involved, and of course I'm referring to there was somebody who said he was led to the Lord by people involved in the Fellowship Foundation, and his conversion may have been a perfectly honest one. I certainly hope that it was, because he's written some beautiful things, and that's Chuck Colson, Charles Colson, who did receive $1 million prize for the Templeton Prize for Progress in Religion.
And I think people have to understand that Templeton is a New Ager, not a Christian.
Exactly. And Paul Temple and Chuck Colson are friends. That was how I initially learned about Paul Temple's involvement. There was a little line in Chuck Colson's book, Born Again, the 1970s book, and it was referring to Paul Temple loaning him his villa in Spain when he needed a place for a vacation retreat.
Now, of course, according to Jeff Charlotte, why Colson has drawn away from the family, I don't know, and
hopefully that is the case.
Hold that through. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly we're talking about the fact that Chuck Colson, who's certainly one of the leaders of the evangelical movement today, was actually drawn into Christianity through the family. Now, of course, according to Jeff Charlotte in his book, The Family, he says that Colson has moved away from the family. Whether that's true, we certainly hope it is true, because he certainly is one of the outstanding Christian leaders of today, but he was at one time deeply involved with this Christian cult. And it's really not a Christian cult. It's an anti-Christian cult. But
now, what was interesting, when Colson became a Christian, and I think his conversion was a very real one, and that they thought that his faith was too simplistic, that he was too fundamentalist. And so they sent a slew of people, theologians, to train him. And they were many of the same theologians that gave me trouble on the New Age movement. But I found it was interesting that they sent these people to try to tone down Chuck Colson's biblical understanding of Christianity. And so they may have been trying to manipulate it. He may have been an honest convert, and they didn't want an honest convert. They wanted somebody who was politically sly. I don't know. And that's my prayer, is that Chuck Colson's conversion was very real, very honest, and the real thing. And if Jeff Charlotte says that he's pulling away, that's a good sign. I would certainly love to talk to Chuck Colson if I ever had the chance.
All right, fine. Well, I thought it was really interesting, and even though Chuck is, pardon me, even though Jeff Charlotte is not a Christian, he's coming from the whole issue from a point of view really of being almost anti-Christian, we're indebted to him for, I think this book is great, I think it's well worthwhile reading, and it does give you an understanding of the truly in my estimation, diabolical influence of this organization, which seems to have almost unlimited funds, unlimited connections, and unlimited influence in the power centers of the entire world. And they intentionally are keeping their existence suppressed so that the average Christian has never heard of them. So go right ahead.
I understand from, I think it was talking to you, that there was some likelihood that that Jeff Charlotte's book would not be reprinted. And I found that disturbing and perhaps an indicator of how deep the influence was of the foundation, if they could prevent a very well-selling book, a very important book, from being re-released to do a little damage control.
We're hoping, of course, that it's coming out in paperback, and we've certainly got our orders in, and my understanding is it'll be out very, very shortly. We'll be carrying the book, the family. But anyway, go right ahead.
It is coming out in paperback?
Yes, is my understanding.
Well,
I hope and pray that it will. Let's go ahead.
Okay. But it's a sophisticated network, and the diplomatic missions around the world, the interaction with the United Nations. Another thing that I've found that there were interactions with the old League of Nations, and then subsequently with the meditation room of the United Nations, which many people think was started out as a Christian initiative, and that JCPenney had something to do about it, and that was the same crowd at the Wainwright House in New York, which is very clearly a New Age center, which was behind the meditation room and the establishment of it at the United Nations. But interestingly, the person who was sent to lobby for the creation of this was the same Frank C. Laubach, who was involved with Abraham Verity at the very beginning and was part of their 12 apostles that were meeting in Mrs. Imar Johnson's home.
And they were, of course, then they eventually became the family, as it were.
Well, they were already the family,
right,
at that point.
Okay.
And this was, these breakfast meetings, they were taking place, they had annual meetings, and it's described almost in occult terms in Grubb's book, and he talks about a line going in Washington, that the line of God's guidance ran from New York to through Washington, D.C., and then the 12 apostles. It said, from Calvary House, New York, the line of God's guidance ran straight down to the most strategic location in America for Christian witness, to Massachusetts Avenue in Washington, often called Embassy Row, where almost every nation in the world has its imposing and sometimes ornate embassy. So they have the mansion there that is leased by the cousin of FDR, and who had, quote, come to the Lord, unquote, under Sam Shoemaker and the group at Calvary House in New York, which was a Buckman Center. And then when Marian Johnson's husband died in 1942, said she asked God where he wanted her to go, and she checked her guidance with Sam Shoemaker and Dr. Glenn Clark. And these were both stalwarts in Buckman's movement, and both and Glenn Clark in particular had a very occult operation with his camps farthest out. And Sam Shoemaker worked very closely with the network of Frank Buckman, the founder of Moral Rearmament. And so they concurred. She checked her guidance with them, and she was said she was called to live in Washington, take her a house and make her home a center for personal Christian work and international fellowship meetings. And then in 1943, this was the year before Paul Temple became involved, in 1944, so she moved with her aunt, Miss Alice Preston of London, her daughter, Moira, and her secretary into Massachusetts Avenue. This was God's living link, they said. Her home with its spacious drawing room became the center she hoped it would be. It almost sounds like the line from the Great Invocation, from the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. It said each new year, the 12 with capital T, capital T on the 12th, held a retreat there. Leaders of various Christian movements. They included Dr. E. Stanley Jones, Dr. Shoemaker, Dr. Rufus Jones, Dr. Frank Laubach, Dr. Glenn Clark, Star Daly, the Reverend John McGee, the rector of the President's Church, Congressman Walter Judd, the Reverend Sherry Day, and others. And they had all these meetings and high-level people at the United Nations, high-level people involved in the starting of NATO, high-level people involved in the organization of the European Union. And then it said, in the unity of their vision, Marian Johnson opened her home to ICL activities. The meetings were led by young Professor Severa Norberg, former president of professor of philosophy in the University of Minnesota, and later head of UNRWA, United Nations Relief Association, I believe that stands for Northern Europe, and Dr. Philip Marshall Brown, former professor of international law at Princeton. Variety would give a message. And this was going on during the wartime years. And then the same crowd went and helped set up the United Nations. And it looks like they were just basically present at the creation of all these things and trying to give a Christian slant to it. And basically, it's hard to say how many folks there were Christians, although Charlet fascinatingly points out in his book that when some of these people tried to do very real Christian things, like offer water to a chauffeur or pray with other people, they were sternly reprimanded.
And I think that was the thing that Jeff Charlet brings out in his book. There's the form of Christianity there, but there's really no true Christianity or Bible study or, certainly...
Not only that, they were trying to suppress true Christianity, right, and true Bible study.
And I think the important thing is, of course, that a number of congressmen are affiliated with this and senators, and some of them will actually, rather than take an apartment there in Washington, D.C., or they're living away from home, they will live there at the family center, live at the mansion that they have, and of course they will be working together with the family for the family's goals. And the family's goals, of course, are internationalist in nature, having nothing to do with the sovereignty of the United States or preserving our way of life. But, of course, are bringing the family's view of world government, the new world government, the new world religion, the new world ruler, into being. And when we have a number of congressmen have lived there, a number of senators have been affiliated with the organization, some of the most powerful people in the country, and yet the few people understand how these people work and influence the workings of our elected representatives. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, and it's also interesting how many people, high-level people that were high-level supporters of early occult New Age causes, Henry Ford, Theosophy, Queen Wilhelmina of the Netherlands, were also prime backers of this movement. And we're supposed to be convinced that this was all Christian, and it looks to me like there was another agenda that was far closer to the Theosophical agenda than any Christian one.
Well, because they seem to have almost unlimited money. They've got mansions, up here, several, my understanding, both in Washington, D.C. and New York and elsewhere. And of course, money doesn't seem to be an issue. The young men, they bring in, they recruit them, they train them, to train them in these ideas. And then they're supposed to go back and get involved in government. Where does the money come from? Follow the money is the old
adage. There's a lot of money there, and they seem to travel, and they seem to have an unlimited budget.
But we really don't know where the money comes from. That's the thing.
I found out where $1.7 million of it came from between 1998 and 2006, and that was very fascinating. And again, it illustrates the secrecy and the veil of deception that has been thrown over this. I Googled one day Paul Temple and Noetic, and Wayne Madsen said the one thing these folks didn't count on was the Internet and our ability to use it and to make connections and to connect dots. And I think Wayne Madsen was correct on that. And one day I just absentmindedly Googled Paul Temple and Noetic, and I was stunned to come up with Three Swallows Foundation. And I looked at that, and he was the head of that, and most of his family served in one position or another on it, along with a few other prominent names. And looked at the...
Who was it who actually was the Three Swallows Foundation?
That's Paul Temple's foundation.
Okay, fine. Okay.
It's his funding vehicle.
Okay.
And it's where his royalties from some of his oil wells and business profits go, and he uses to fund various causes. And I looked at it, and there were contributions to Arthur Blessed Ministries, small, Campus Crusade, modest, some nice contributions to All Seasons Chalice Church. There were very large contributions to the Institute of Noetic Sciences and various other occult causes. There were contributions to Barbara Marks Hubbard's operations. And then I saw a very large contribution to something called International Foundation. I followed up on it. What was this International Foundation in Washington, D.C.? And on the Internet, there are funding sources, and they had a link. So I clicked on the link, and when I looked at the link, it was for a little group in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. And I looked at their little handwritten 990 form, and I said, this just can't be it. They had a very modest budget, about $500 a year. I said, this just can't be it. And so I went back in, and I went into the 990 reports. I had to do some digging at that point. And I opened the reports available online in PDF form and found an address. I had to go way to the end of the reports, and I found an address for the International Foundation. And I Googled the address. And when I Googled the address, it was Doug Coe's address.
So basically, of course, everything is to keep the people from really knowing what's going on.
Right,
and
it was deliberate deception to let people think it was this other group in Oklahoma. And then thanks to the spreadsheets, because I went to law school because it required no math, I'll be honest with you on that, but the spreadsheets have been a great equalizer, the computer spreadsheets. And so I tallied the amounts that were given just to the International Foundation in Washington, D.C. between 1998 and 2006, and it totaled just about $1.7 million for Fellowship Foundation and $700,000 for the Institute of Noetic Sciences. And I thought, well, no wonder I've caught the flack that I have from this group. I'm looking at least 1,700,000 good reasons why they wanted me to shut up.
Right, and of course the last
all of them with dollar signs in front of them.
And of course, I think it's so vitally important to understand that this group. I mean, the presidential prayer breakfast held on a yearly basis. Christians come from all across the country thinking this has to do with a religious group, with the President of the United States, and he's usually there, isn't he, Constance?
Yes, he almost always is. I consider it a must performance.
And he, of course, will get up and give a speech, but maybe even the President doesn't understand the occult foundation, the occult origin of this group where he's speaking. And until people begin to understand that our enemies are very, very clever, they know exactly what they're doing. The one thing they fear is Christianity. That's why they've infiltrated our organizations and infiltrated our seminaries and certainly infiltrated pulpits all across the country and, you know, influenced the people who are leading the Christians of our nation.
Well, these people also had unprecedented access to high-level leaders in many countries.
And I think that's really so true. And certainly they have influence to the high-level leaders in our country and in other nations. And they do have an agenda. And it seems to all go back to that age-old concept, the New World Order, the New World Religion, the New World Leader.
Right. And interestingly, Frank Buckman was very open about it. They were working for a third way, a New World Order. And that this new movement was going to usher things in and we would have a new golden age on earth. And this was, when I first discovered the New Age movement, I remember a friend who's no longer with us, but he looked at this and he said, you know, he said, this reminds me of moral rearmament. Well, now I find out that moral rearmament was part of it.
And so they've been around for a long time. They've been around for about 5,000 years, Chris.
Well, and it looks like in modern form that there have been three waves. And the first wave was to undermine and subvert and use the Protestant missionary movement and to soften the world for Krishnamurti. The second wave was to neutralize people and make things easier for Hitler. And the third move was to prepare the world for this new Messiah, whoever and whatever he is.
Well, I guess it's been Constance Cumby. We hope that you've enjoyed this dissertation on the family. We'll be right back. Well, Constance, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the marathon.
Well, it's confusion, and I think what we need to be reminded of is that Satan's game right from the beginning has been confusion, and this thing is confusing, and ultimately it's God who judges the hearts and tries the reins, and however people came to know God. If they did come to know God, I've known New Agers who came to be Christians reading the Aquarian Gospel, got entranced with who this Jesus was, and then went and read the real Bible and became the real thing. And I'm sure there are people who have been reached for God through these various ministries, and I don't want to do anything whatsoever to destroy their faith. But if they do tell you, let's go serve other gods, telling you to go call the Dalai Lama your holiness. When that happens, we do not dare go there. And we have to remember that Satan's game was confusion right from the beginning. God is not the author of confusion. And I think what we have to do is just pray daily that God will show us what is of him and what is not. And usually if you pray that prayer sincerely, it gets answered pretty speedily, and things you'll start noticing things. There's no substitute for getting into the Word and knowing it and for yourself, but you don't have to accept somebody else's necessary interpretation, Doug Coe or the Fellowship Foundation thing. Jesus said in that day, many will say to me, Lord, Lord, what didn't we prophesy in thy name and cast out devils in thy name? And he said, depart from me, ye that work iniquity. I never knew you. And only God knows right now which are his and which are not. But we need to pray for wisdom, and we need to also be cautious about people who seize power in the name of religion.
And because I think that we're living in really the most exciting, dangerous, frightening times, but exhilarating times, as we realize, of course, that God is real, that we're seeing the fulfillment of the prophecies made thousands of years ago as we move away from national sovereignty, away from, for instance, a American financial system into a world financial system. That's why I believe they want to destroy the value of our currency and currencies throughout the world. This whole thing is collapsing as we speak today, and I think that we're going to see dramatic changes in the world. Well, our guest is Constance Cumby. It's always a pleasure, Constance. Thanks so much for staying up. We'll look forward to talking again real soon.
Thank you very much, Dr. Monteith.
Good night. God bless. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We do hope that you enjoyed our conversations with Constance Cumby. We will be putting together a 4-tape, 4-CD set on the family. Our interviews with Jeff Charlotte, Wayne Madsen, Constance Cumby. And you'll have a grasp of what this is really all about. And simply one more group in this whole movement aimed at a new world order, a new world religion, the destruction of Christianity, and the imposition and installation of a new world leader. Once you understand that, everything begins to make sense. So, of course, remember our telephone number. It's 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We do hope many of you out there will want to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and read it. We'll, of course, you can get the CD or the DVD if you prefer. And then, of course, we have our talk on the forbidden secret, which I believe is important with the syllabus. We have a talk on the planned police state with the syllabus. And, of course, here you'll read some of the writings of the occultists as they talk about the spiritual hierarchy that rules the world. If you get any of our products, we'll be glad to send you a copy of the pamphlet put out by the Lucis Trust. It used to be the Lucifer Publishing House, but the Lucis Trust has published this. It's called the Workings of the Spiritual Hierarchy. And, of course, it will tell you that they have their people planted at every level of every government, both in the East and in the West. And we'll be glad to get you a free copy of that. If you certainly get any of the other copies of any of the other products we talk about. And certainly we, of course, have a great deal of information if you really want to understand O.J. Simpson. And people sort of shrug, why is O.J. important? Why, it's important because you've never gotten the truth. We have a great 4-tape set on O.J. Simpson. I believe it's true because I've encountered people a woman, I've told the story before, a black woman, whose brother had actually been in contact with members of the team, the Special Forces team that was sent to kill Nicole Simpson. Why? So to turn black against white and white against black, and most black people feel that O.J. Simpson killed his wife. Pardon me, most white people believe O.J. Simpson killed his wife. Most black people feel he was set up and framed, and I believe he was framed as well. In fact, one of the four interviews that we do is with a man who was contacted by a member of the team that killed Nicole Simpson and told the story. Fascinating interviews. You'll never hear anything like it. The 4-tape set on O.J. Simpson. Then, of course, we have a 4-tape or 4-CD set on the execution of Martin Luther King. We carry the book written by the lawyer, Mr. William Pepper, who was actually engaged by the Martin Luther King's family for a trial to bring out the truth about the execution of Martin Luther King by the Central Intelligence Agency. And when the jury heard the evidence, the conclusion, after 4 months, why the government was 70% responsible for the murder of Martin Luther King. You remember when that hit the front headlines of our newspapers? And, of course, it was never mentioned in the American media. That's why this 4-tape set is unlike anything else out there. That's, of course, the execution of Martin Luther King, the book, An Act of State by William Pepper. They're available by calling 1-800-544-8927. You need to get the truth about O.J. I mean, the 4-tape set we have. And, of course, there's other information out there. So much information. Remember our website, radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Remember, we're having our all-day seminar here on the 26th of October, and we're bringing in Dr. Blaylock to talk on medicine. Sydney Joanna Michelson to talk about her experience when she was a medium in contact with the other dimension. Patrick Wood will be here talking about the financial collapse of our nation, what you must know if you hope to survive. That's October 26th, a Sunday. It'll be a fascinating all-day conference. Give us a call of 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927, our webpage, radioliberty.com, and please pray for America, pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection.